gotta buy my joint up on this bitch. I miss you, I miss you, I miss you. Few times. Yeah. Sticking to the code, all these hoes for the street. I put it in her nose, it's gon' make her pussy leak. Pussy niggas told ain't gon' wake up out they sleep. You can't hear that switch, but you can't hear them niggas scream.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 228 of Two Black Nerds. That's right, it's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and our takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on all social media at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that love, y'all. And let's not forget to mention we have merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Nerds of Mischief collection, inspired by Loki. We got t-shirts, crew neck, hoodie, stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing a new found footage horror film, Late Night with the Devil. Also, we'll discuss the Roadhouse remake starring Jake Gyllenhaal that recently premiered on Prime Video. Plus, we'll also discuss the brand new biographical drama, Shirley, that just recently premiered on Netflix. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this podcast with a review of the fifth installment in the iconic Ghostbusters franchise, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
For the first time in New York history, a room full of people froze to death in July.
It's an unimaginable evil with the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
Now it's headed straight for us.
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It's commanding an army of the undead.
I think we're all going to die.
Hold on your ass!
This could bring about the end of humankind.
Disgusting.
Now, this film is directed by Gil Keenan, it's written by Gil Keenan and Jason Reitman, and it's starring Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Kumail Nanjiani, Patton Oswalt, Celeste O'Connor, Logan Kim, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and Annie Potts. So, Ghostbusters, this is a 40-plus year franchise that is still kicking, it's still going. I actually think that this year is the 40th anniversary of the first Ghostbusters that came out in 1984. There's been tons of spinoffs, animated shows, comic book toys, merchandise, and now, of course, four sequels that they have made. This movie is following up Ghostbusters Afterlife, a movie that we did indeed review and talk about on this podcast. That was sort of the return to the proper Ghostbusters timeline. They had the all-female reboot that came out in 2016, but the one that came out a couple of years ago, Ghostbusters Afterlife, was a direct sequel to Ghostbusters 2, and it brought back a lot of the legacy characters like Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson, while also establishing this new generation. And due to the success of that film, I think a film that we mostly found enjoyable, they decided to go ahead and make another iteration of this franchise, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And so we got a chance to go check this out this past weekend. So with all of that out the way, man, I will pass it over to you. What did you think about this new entry, Frozen Empire?
This movie is not as enjoyable as its predecessor. The thing is about this movie, I didn't hate watching it, but there's so much in it that I did not like. And I was actually pretty excited coming into this Ghostbusters Frozen Empire because I like what they did with Ghostbusters. Was it Afterlife 2021? I like that movie. It's fine. I think I like how they introduced some new characters. You can see where we were going with Phoebe, the character. We're like, okay, we have some new things. Of course, you got to do the we brought back a franchise, so let's bring back all the original players. Of course, they went through that. And you know, it was a fine movie. I was like, okay, coming into this movie, it's too much going on, bro. That for me, it's just too much going on. This movie has 25 characters, and that's probably hyperbole, but the more I think about it, maybe it's not. Like, there is so many characters in this movie. And what's funny is, of course, they bring back the original cast. We know that. They bring back the original cast, and then they do nothing with them. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler. I don't even know if that's considered. They don't do, they, They don't touch them at all. And I would have rather them just have left those people out or do something with them if you're going to include them. And they did neither. And that was very frustrating to watch. There's like 20 subplots to this movie as well. There's just so much that they felt like they had to do. And the reason I feel like this movie falls short for me is because in watching it, I didn't feel like I was watching a Ghostbusters movie. I feel like I watched a movie that was inspired by Ghostbusters that's now trying to become a franchise. And I don't like that, because that's not what made Ghostbusters fun. Is, oh, we're trying to become this franchise. It's just because they had fun making those films. The first two Ghostbusters are fun movies. Shoot, to be honest, Ghostbusters 2016 with the main female cast, at least they understood that Ghostbusters was supposed to be funny. You know what I mean? I don't hate that movie either. At least they understood that it was supposed to be funny. Here, it didn't feel like that. Here, for me, it felt like they were trying to propel themselves in the superhero land, even though it's not that big of a scale. But it does feel like that by the end of it. Dude, the stakes are ridiculous. The stakes are through the roof, but none of the characters feel like, or nothing else that transpired feel like we were stepping up to that. And so, yeah, this movie, again, I know I said a lot there, but this movie is like, again, it's not hard to watch, but I didn't like a lot of the things that was happening. There's too much going on. There's too many subplots. There's too many characters. And that's pretty much the movie for me. I laughed a couple times. I actually don't hate the storyline that they try to do with Phoebe as the main character, but all of that is lost in so much noise and so many callbacks and so much let's do this, let's do that, that I think they really miss the essence of the fun of Ghostbusters. And yeah, that's unfortunate. You don't hear the song that much. You don't shoot. I wish they included Bobby Brown. Maybe Bobby Brown could have made a song, because Ghostbusters 2, that Bobby Brown was jamming. But yeah, man, it's just a lot of it just fell flat for me. And by the end, it's just like this is not the Ghostbusters I remember. Not on some, oh, I am gatekeeping Ghostbusters, that's why this is bad, because they're making new Ghostbusters movies. No, it's because you still got to like make a decent movie that still has the spirit of Ghostbusters. And I feel like they kind of missed the spirit a little bit trying to make this movie, or trying to make this into a franchise, and not just trying to make a good Ghostbusters movie. And so, yeah, I left disappointed. I did.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, it's pretty bad. I think that this is just a complete misfire for the most part. It's my least favorite Ghostbusters movie at this point, which is a little shocking. I would not have predicted that coming into this. The 2016 version is fine. It's okay. It's watchable, but I don't necessarily enjoy watching it. I thought that would always just kind of be this outlier because it is in its own separate universe, but this one just comes in and it's a complete snooze fest. It's boring. I didn't enjoy it. I think that the villain is a nothing villain in this movie. There are way too many characters. It's overlong. The CGI isn't that great at several points in time. For some reason, they decide to freeze over all of New York City and just raise the stakes on a completely ridiculous cosmic level, further than we've ever taken it anywhere before. Like, yes, the first one has Gozer, the Gozerian, and you have a huge Stay Puft Marshmallow Man walking around New York City.
Camp.
That was unique and epic, and that felt right and appropriate for that moment. And it was born out of a really brilliant concept of thinking of something innocent turning into all of a sudden this monstrous figure, you know. And now we're just at the point where we're dealing with a knockoff version of the Slender Man coming to freeze New York City and freeze the world. Like, I just didn't understand why we were here. And I think the biggest misstep with this movie, though, is that it doesn't have any heart, really. It doesn't have any of those emotions. Like, what I really did enjoy about Ghostbusters Afterlife is how much they connected the two generations, the previous generation, while also establishing this new era. And that's the best work that any legacy sequel can do. It can bridge that gap. And they did so much with Egon and the legacy that he left behind and how much that affected his family. And there was this tension, and you had the original Ghostbusters, you know, who were off, you know, sort of living their own lives. Like, Winston was, you know, this all of a sudden super wealthy, you know, investment banker, and Venkman was out of commission nowhere. Ray Stantz still had his shop. Like, they just did such a good job at just bridging that gap, bringing these two worlds together, so that by the time they showed up at the end of Afterlife, it was like, oh yeah, I'm glad I waited for that. I'm glad that, you know, we can just kind of sit back and really tie that bow up nicely. Now, obviously, them being here, they're going to be a little bit more of a factor, but they just assemble the Ghostbusters Avengers. Every person available can be a Ghostbusters. Everybody gets a uniform. Everybody gets the proton pack. Everybody's ready to fight. And I just didn't enjoy that, because what it does, it places too much focus on too many people, and by doing so, you don't service anybody all that well. I will push back on what you said about original cast members. I do feel like they had a lot to do for Ray in particular, but Ray had a lot. Everybody else, though, like Bill Murray, two
Bill
scenes.
Bill just kind of showed up, bro.
He just showed up, dog. Ernie Hudson, he had a couple of scenes.
He had a little bit.
But yeah, Ray is kind of the one that had a lot to do. Dan Aykroyd had more to do here. Mm-hmm. But even then, it's just not enough. It's not enough to pick this movie up and save it and make it that enjoyable. Overall, I just felt that it was lackluster. And to be honest, you know, I don't need them to make anymore. I don't need that. Of course, they will eventually. Of course, that's going to be a thing. Like, it's not going to rest. That's not how capitalism works. They will revisit Ghostbusters at some point. But we probably need to let this rest for a bit. And what I will say to that, though, is that I would like to see more of McKenna Grace in this role. Yes. And in this universe, because she's really good. Absolutely. Love how they've passed the torch to her. She can clearly carry this. She's such a talented young actress. I just love the stuff that they set up there for her, but there's just so much extra shit here that kind of distracts you from it. Like Kumail Nanjiani's character, like I didn't need that. Patton Oswalt pops up for a quick why, like, what are you doing here? It's just certain stuff that just felt unnecessary. And so I think that they kind of need to let this cool off for a while before returning to the franchise, but we will certainly have to see. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. If you've checked out this movie, hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, we're going to transition to a brand new film that has a lot of word of mouth going on social media right now, a brand new horror flick from producer Shudder, Late Night with the Devil.
We are back. In 5, 4. Now, here's Mr. Midnight, Jack Delroy.
Oh, good evening, Night Owls, and thank you for allowing me into your living rooms once again.
Well, Night Owls, we've got a heck of a show in store for you tonight, and I'm very excited for you to see it all unfold before your very eyes. I really hope you love it. Gosh, I hope you love it. Please love it.
I'm trying to host a nationally syndicated talk show.
And I'm trying to help you keep it on the air.
We all know how important it is to keep our sponsors and affiliates happy, but in my humble opinion, there is only one person who really matters in this whole darn crazy business. And that is you, our viewer.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. She's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do live TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
Lily, can you hear me?
Good to see you again, Jack.
Lily, return to me.
This isn't about ratings anymore.
No one's going anywhere.
How could you let it happen, Jack? How could you let it happen?
Please be warned, anyone with young children in the room, you're about to see...
You okay, Jack?
It's profoundly disturbing and shocking.
Get out there, Mr. Midnight. And you knock him dead.
Now, this movie is written and directed by Colin Cairns and Cameron Cairns, and it's starring David Dasmalchian, Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss, and Faisal Bazzi. So, Late Night with the Devil. A lot of people have probably not heard about this movie. It's a smaller horror movie, but this is a co-production of a few different countries. It's a co-production of the United States, the UAE, Australia, and this movie also had its premiere a year ago. It technically came out at the South by Southwest Film Festival in 2023, but it's yet to have an official theatrical and or streaming release. It's just now a year later rolling out in theaters, and then it will make its debut on the streaming service Shudder in about a month. I think it comes out April 19th on Shudder, and they are also financiers and producers behind the movie. But this is a found footage horror film. It's a period piece. It takes place in the 70s. And like I said, it's been the talk of social media. A lot of people have been buzzing about this movie, and the trailers and the marketing have been very interesting. And it's not the only movie that came out this weekend. Immaculate also came out. That's a movie we're going to have to get to and review eventually. But we decided to go check this one out and see what this was about. And so with all of that out the way, man, I will pass it over to you. What did you think about Late Night with the Devil?
Hey, bro, before I get into my review, at the beginning of this movie, they show like 15 title cards and production companies, and we thought it was a gag at first, but then the movie starts and I was like, I don't think that was a gag. I think this is literally all the people involved in this movie. It was kind of crazy seeing how
I've never seen that many production companies on a movie. It was legit like 15, no lie. Sitting there going and going and going. It felt like the beginning of what was it, Scream 4, that had all the fake ending or fake openings. It kind of felt like openings. That like this got to be a joke, but it's not.
No, that was so crazy, man. I remember that forever because it's like, yo, what is going on? I thought that was really funny. But man, getting into it, Late Night with the Devil. Wow. What a movie. This movie is found footage, as Jordan said, but it's about a live broadcast of a late night TV talk show in 1977. And what happens is the acts that are coming onto this man's show are all, he has like a supernatural night, pretty much supernatural slash religious kind of night on this talk show. And everybody is kind of about what they say. And that's kind of all I'm going to give you. But it is crazy. I had a blast with this film. I absolutely enjoyed it. They give a little bit of backstory of David Osmalchian's character, who is the host. And that leads into some story later on, dealing with some of the people that they have on the show. And it really is just that, this like horror film mixed with a found footage 1977 late night talk show. And I love this idea. So I'm like mad I didn't think about it first. I think this is a really cool format for a horror film. It was really dope to see. You don't really see too many people like, oh, let's not only do found footage, but to make it into a late night talk show is, to me, it's genius. And so, yeah, I give a lot of kudos to that. But not only that, but there were moments that were really cool. There were moments that were really scary. There were moments that used practical effects that I was like, finally, people are using practical effects again. I absolutely loved it. And some of the performances were really good. Jordan knows I kept talking about this one young lady in particular who did come on the show, and she is supposed to be possessed, but I thought she was killing it. She was doing these very subtle things, the way she looks at the camera, the way you have to see the movie to understand, but I really, really liked her, and what she was doing. The only thing I don't like about this movie is the ending. I thought it ended very abruptly. They do all of this setup in the beginning of the movie to explain David Osmalchian's character as the host and what he has gone through with his wife. And then they do make a callback to it. But then by the end, it's just like, oh, that's it. Like, that's the end of, we spent all of this time doing this, talking about his character, and it's resolved in like one quick interaction, and then the movie just ends. That's kind of my problem. My only problem with the movie, though, I think the roller coaster that it takes you on in between, again, I really liked it, man. And I thought they had a lot of cool ideas and infusing a lot of horror elements in it. And it's unique. And I think that's what I like about it the most, is I've never seen anything like it. So, yeah, man, I had a really good time watching it. And I can't wait till it's on Shudder to watch it again, to be honest.
You had a note to get into before your review. I have another one too. Did you see that? So this movie opened up this past week and it had its first, you know, sort of official wide release. Did you see that on Sunday, apparently it made $666,666 at the movies this past Sunday?
Yeah, right. That would be crazy.
They juicing them fucking numbers. Get out of here. There's no way you land on exactly that. But it's a good marketing ploy. I'll give them that.
It is.
But
that's good.
Anyway, Late Night with the Devil. I first heard about this movie like 4 weeks ago, maybe. It was pretty recent that I started to hear about it just because so much was being said on social media about this new David Dasmalchian movie, which, by the way, if you've been following this guy's career, he's a good guy. He's a really good actor. His first movie was The Dark Knight, Chris Nolan. That was the first time you saw him. And he was one of the Joker's henchmen. And he had that creepy laugh, you know, that happened in the movie. And it was like, that guy has a really interesting face. Like, I'm not going to forget what he looks like. And I'm just so glad that he's been able to build up this incredible career of working in a lot of genre films. You know, he's been working with Denis Villeneuve in the Dune movies, and he worked with Chris Nolan a few times. And we saw him in the Suicide Squad, Polka Dot Man, James Gunn, Suicide Squad. The guy has built up a really impressive resume, but now to be able to lead something and to be at the forefront, it's an incredible opportunity. So I was excited to check it out for him. And overall, Late Night with the Devil is such a satisfying watch. It's such a great horror movie, because what I love most about it is how much it's combining so many other elements of so many movies that I love to make something that does feel different.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It is found footage, but it's pulling a lot from all over the place. You know, it's a lot like Sidney Lumet's Network. There's a little bit of The Exorcist. There's Poltergeist. There's all these things that come together to make this really interesting experience that's about a guy in the television world doing pretty much whatever it takes to make sure that he remains relevant, that ratings go through the roof, the price of fame, like all of that stuff comes into play. And it showcases just like how much somebody is, for lack of a better term, willing to sell their soul just to pop a rating. And I think that that's just like a very relevant thing that we see in current Hollywood, in previous iterations of Hollywood, in the television landscape. Like, people will go to very far lengths to shock audiences and to pull in viewers and to get conversations around whatever the product is. And in this particular movie, we see this guy as a TV host who was like, he's dealing with some challenges. Like, his show is in the decline, the ratings are falling, and now he needs something to really juice those numbers to get the attention back on him to make sure that he can move on and have a successful run as this late night talk show host. And so he hosts basically a demon fucking night, and it turns into a chaotic haywire hell fest. And it's like, well, yeah, that's gonna end up bad, my guy, because you just allowed the worst energy possible onto your show. But it doesn't get there immediately. This movie is a bit of a slow burn, but I think in a good way. It's a difference between being just slow for the sake of being slow, but being deliberately intentional with your pacing. And I think that this movie is super deliberate with how it paces itself out, because when the moments that pop do pop, I think that they come at the very right moments of the movie, because it's not long. It's like 90 something minutes, as it should be. And the moments that really come and hit you over the head, like, oh yeah, shit's going crazy, I think that they come at the right times. Really strong performances, some super colorful characters that happen throughout the course of this movie, and some really just strange, bizarre moments that you're watching. And a lot of it does feel real, because it is, you know, sort of taking that found footage approach. You know, it's placing you in the seat of somebody who's just like possibly watching this on an analog TV in 1977 at home, as if you're not supposed to be watching it. It almost feels like you're invading this space and this TV show, and then all of a sudden you see just the shit hit the fan, and it absolutely does. So overall, I really, really enjoyed it. I think that this is a hoot to watch with movie fans at the theater. Like, this is a great one to go out and watch, because people are going to be laughing. People are going to be hell no. People are going to have all sorts of reactions. Like, it's the perfect, like, Friday night movie. Yeah. And so it was fantastic. I really love it. I would agree with you about the ending. The ending is kind of where it's like, oh man, we need a little bit more there. And it does get haywire for a movie that is somewhat subdued for a lot of its runtime. The stuff that happens at the end of the movie is like, you know, where did this come from? Like, what? Whoa. Like, what are we talking about right now? This is like extraterrestrial type shit. But you know, I think once you kind of get used to it and you understand like what's happening there, it's good. It's really good. It's a fun movie. And so I would absolutely definitely recommend people check it out whenever it hits Shudder. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on the brand new found horror film, Late Night with the Devil. If you've checked it out, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, we're going to transition to another movie, a new remake that actually just premiered recently on Prime Video, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Roadhouse.
Before we start, do you have insurance?
What?
Your coverage good? Like, you have dental?
Oh, haha.
Is there a hospital nearby? Is it, like, too far?
About, like, 25 minutes, I'd say.
I just slapped you. Are you all right?
What?
So you like to fight?
You ever win?
No one ever wins a fight.
This ain't the Holiday Inn, pal.
I'm moving.
A friend of mine suggested I come talk to you. I own a roadhouse out in the Florida Keys. Lately, it's been attracting the wrong clientele. I can pay you good money. Judging by your car, you need that.
Well, I like my car.
Think about it. Come on, bro.
I know who you are. Elwood Dalton, Big Bandit.
That guy's got a knife under his shirt. You just take a big step back and pop me in the face. You can do it.
Tell me about this bouncer.
Yeah, it's all nice, like he's Mr. Rogers or something, but then he'll haul off. Really interesting guy, overall.
Brand wants to take the roadhouse away from me. He wants to build some resort.
I should warn you, people have a certain way of getting things done around here.
Hey, fellas. Looks like you're having a smashing night. Dalton! I got a tip for you. Don't let no one get this close. Come on, bro.
Let me guess. You know, threaten me. Tell me to get out of town.
I get the impression that you can't be threatened.
Once Knox is on the job, it's over, baby.
It takes a lot to get me angry, but when I am, I just can't let go. People seem a little aggressive around here.
Is that one a friend of yours?
No, I just broke his arm.
Now, this movie is directed by Doug Liman, and it's written by Anthony Bagarazzi and Charles Mondry, and it's starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Daniela Melchior, Jessica Williams, Joaquin Almeida, and Conor McGregor as well. So Roadhouse, this version that just came out this year, it is a remake of the 1989 Roadhouse movie starring Patrick Swayze. And Roadhouse is a movie that I haven't properly watched until I watched this new one. I decided to watch both of them back to back. I always caught scenes of the old Roadhouse on cable, and I think that that's really where the 1989 version's popularity kind of exploded, was the fact that it was a movie that just kind of played on cable a lot. It was a movie that would always come out, and if you came out or if you were around when it came out in the 80s, you probably grew a love and an affinity for it. But I think a lot of people probably discover it just due to the reruns on cable that it experienced all throughout the years. But fast forward all these years later, and they have decided to go ahead and remake Roadhouse. And I remember seeing this trailer a few months ago, actually, and being pretty excited about it. Jake Gyllenhaal, one of my favorite actors, really, really enjoy the work that he does. I think that he is one of our most unusual, yet also like interesting actors. Like the roles that he takes on, you can never really predict like where he's going to go. But anytime he's in something, I make it a point to check it out, and I wanted to go ahead and watch Roadhouse this weekend, of course, being excited for it. And I gotta say, not a great movie. Roadhouse is not great at all. I was actually pretty let down by what I saw here. I think it's at times it's actively bad even. And this is again, you know, taking it with a grain of salt for the fact that I did just watch the original in full properly. And what I think is admirable about the 89 movie is that it actively knows that it's a B movie. This is not meant to be something that changes the world. Like Roadhouse is not, that's not The English Patient. It's not Citizen Kane. It's meant to just be a fun, good time. It's a bunch of men beating each other up, beating the shit out of each other, you know, at this new Roadhouse bar. And I think that there's something charming about that. I'm a little biased towards 80s movies, but I think that there's so much that's working for it, and a certain element of charm and self-awareness in that movie. And longevity that makes it work. And not only that, I mean, Patrick Swayze, I mean, he's one of the most charismatic movie stars we've really ever had. Like,
ever.
The guy wasn't in a ton of stuff necessarily, but the movies that he led, there's nobody really like Patrick Swayze. There's nobody with his energy, with his his charisma. The guy is a one of one, and so it's unfortunately we lost him a few years ago. And now with this one, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal, again, somebody I'm interested in, he's playing a different type of leading man in this movie. He's a different type of movie star altogether, and he has a different type of energy. And I don't have a problem with that. I actually kind of enjoyed what he brought here. There's similar characteristics. It's a guy who's like a cowboy that shows up into a town. He has a dark past. He's responsible for the death of somebody. You don't really know that much about him, but he does have a reputation. He brings all of that over from the Patrick Swayze interpretation of the Dalton character into this movie. That still is there. Mm-hmm. Overall, what I just don't like about this movie is the fact that it's nowhere near as fun. It's boring to me at many points in time in the course of the film. And what I found the most egregious is that it isn't really about the Roadhouse itself. Like, the thing about the first movie is that, like, it's about Patrick Swayze's character Dalton building the Roadhouse in his image, hiring the new people, firing the people that don't work. He's ushering in a new era for the Roadhouse and establishing his order. You know, it's like a new cowboy coming into the town as the new sheriff, almost taking over. And they don't really have any of that here. Like, the Roadhouse is not even secondary. It might be just like a tertiary thing in this film. And that was just so weird and strange to me. Also, the romance that he has here with Daniela Melchior's character. There's a romance in the first one. He has a romance here as well. It's almost, you know, a nothing romance. We don't really know anything about her. We don't learn anything about her. It's kind of a waste of her talent and her potential because they don't take it far enough to really allow us as an audience to develop a connection for them. So I found that disappointing. And then ultimately, the fighting, it just didn't do anything for me. There was a lot of CGI used in the fighting, which this is hand-to-hand combat. This is not like over-the-top Matrix Reloaded shit. Like, this is supposed to be close quarters hand-to-hand combat, and there's just weird placement and usage of CGI. It's almost as if the actors never had contact with each other. Like, there was never any contact made with the punches, which in reality, you're not supposed to make contact, but you're supposed to make it look real enough as if contact does connect. But they do some weird CGI tricks where you can just easily tell where the camera is and where the fists and the punches get pulled back, or I don't even know how to communicate it because it just feels off. It just feels so strange to me, and I don't understand the choices why. I know that they tried to do some interesting camera tricks here. That stuff just felt like a distraction. You know, I just want a long take of hand-to-hand combat. I just want the action to look crisp and clean and realistic. I want it to feel hard-hitting, like a John Wick movie, and it never feels like that. You know, it feels really manufactured, really choreographed, and I didn't enjoy it. And, you know, Conor McGregor's in this movie. He's a rambunctious fucking clown version of himself. He's basically playing a version of himself in this movie. The guy is, I mean, he's not a good actor, but it's Conor. He's doing himself, essentially. And so if you enjoy Conor as a personality, you'll probably enjoy him being a sociopathic maniac in this film, but he's not a great actor. He's pretty bad to me in this movie. And, you know, some people out there, they might say, like, well, just enjoy it. Just have fun with it. It's not taking itself serious. And that's all true. Like, it knows it's not supposed to be a serious movie. But, you know, I don't think we even get B-movies anymore. I don't even know if that's, like, a genre that's actively being tackled and addressed right now. I don't even know if we can achieve that just due to the landscape of streaming and theatrical.
Exactly.
And also, I think that if I'm being honest, and this is an interesting thing about just the rollout of the movie, if this came out in theaters, and if I saw it in theaters, I feel like I probably would have enjoyed it more. I know Doug Liman had a lot of conflict and a lot of head-to-head with Amazon and apparently Jeff Bezos. Like, he really wanted this to go theatrical. He made it for theatrical. They did not have that. They did not want that. They put it directly to streaming. There were a lot of critics and a lot of people who got a chance to see this ahead of time in theaters at South by Southwest where it premiered, got a lot of positive reactions. I feel like on a Friday night in the movie theater with a beer in my hand, I would have had a good time. Like, fuck it. I'm here. Like, why not? It's fine. I'm not expecting too much out of it, but watching it at home on Prime Video, I don't feel like that's the optimal way to watch it. And so, maybe I would have enjoyed it more, but in the way that they delivered it to us, this is a huge, huge step down. I'll just stick with Patrick Swayze. I'll stick with the original, and that's the one I'll watch from now on.
Man, I've never even seen the original. What's funny is the only time I have ever really, the reference I know Roadhouse is Family Guy. Like, he would, like, kick people, and then he would say Roadhouse, like, afterwards. Every time. That's the only, that's actually the only place that I really have heard of or have a connection to Roadhouse. But, man, that's too bad. I don't know if it was this set, but I recently heard Jake Gyllenhaal was being like weird on one of these sets. Is it this one? I don't know. I heard somebody, people.
There were rumors. I don't think it's been confirmed. There were rumors. Is it tied to the Rebecca Ferguson comments that she made? Because she talked about a movie star that she worked with that mistreated her, was a dick and an asshole to her. And basically people took her comments and they sort of did a process of elimination because she was obviously talking about a guy. And people said, like, well, it can either be Dwayne Johnson, it can be Jake Gyllenhaal, or it can be Michael Fassbender. Somebody, like, got it down to those three. And The Rock came out and he was like, whoever did this, I want to come after them. Like, she's my angel. I love working with her. And a lot of people thought it might have been Jake because, you know, Jake has an aura about him. I mean, we don't know Jake, but he seems like a bit of a serious guy, like who takes things very, I mean, but speaking of taking things seriously and being a little, I mean, he was fucking jacked in this movie. That's one thing I will give him credit for. He was juiced to the gills. The guy was in incredible shape in this movie. I mean, he was chiseled out of stone because his past, which is also different from the original, is that he's an MMA fighter. He fought in UFC. That was not a plot point in the first movie, but he had to get in fighter shape for this movie, and he looked tremendous. But yeah, Jake is known to go to deep, dark places sometimes with his movies, but I don't know if it was him. I don't know if he was acting weird on sets or not. I can't verify.
Yeah, man, it's so interesting. But yeah, Prime Video has been trying, and they're hit or miss. You know, they're like up or down with their movies. But sad to hear this is a miss, especially with like most people still have heard Roadhouse before. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you haven't seen the Patrick Swayze joint, most people have heard Roadhouse before. So yeah, even when you were talking about like the action in it, it made me feel like oh, was he watching like a Steven Seagal movie? You know what I'm saying? Because you could tell like that punch was weird looking. Oh, that punch was weird looking. Like, oh, was that what they were going for, or is they're just missing completely? Maybe they haven't caught up with the time, or they weren't trying to. I don't know. That's really interesting. But yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, all the fight scenes here, they look like they're just completely made up in a computer. It's a weird thing. I really just don't know how to describe it because I haven't necessarily seen it before. Like, I mean, we've been doing fighting in movies for a long time. It seems like that there's like a tried and true formula to that, and they tried to do something different here. I'll never take that, you know, away from them, and I'll give them credit for that, but the CGI, the choices, I don't understand it. I don't get it. I hope to not see it in future action movies. It just didn't work for me. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on the brand new remake Roadhouse. If you check this out on Prime Video, hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, we're going to transition and talk about our final movie this week, the brand new biographical drama that just premiered on Netflix, Shirley.
I have something I want to tell you. I am running for president.
Of the United States? Holy.
I'm paving the road for a lot of other people looking like me to get elected.
Brooklyn's first black representative.
You're about to make history.
You want to be president? You ain't no man.
Maybe we should find your mother.
All you got is your one vote.
You sound just like every other politician.
Do I look like every other politician?
Truly, you can't win.
And why can't I win? I have an opportunity to make a difference.
Creation! This isn't a campaign. It's a joke. The only thing anybody's going to remember is that there were a bunch of black folks who made fools of themselves. I'll kill you!
See, too much suffering. And I don't know how to not try. I think I'm special. I just want to remind people what's possible.
We need something that's going to make some noise.
The Black Panthers and Shirley Chisholm. It's like thunder and lightning. I'm going to force all the politicians to be held accountable.
You're going to do all that. School teacher from Brooklyn.
Harriet was just a slave. Rosa was just a domestic. What is it you do for a living again? People of America are watching us.
Yeah. Now, this film is written and directed by John Ridley. It's starring Regina King, Lance Reddick, Lucas Hedges, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Christina Jackson, and Terrence Howard. So, Shirley, again, it's a biographical drama. It's been long in development, from what I understand, but this is about Shirley Chisholm, who is a prominent, historic African-American figure, really in all of history. It really depicts her bid at running for president in the early 70s. She's largely known for being one of the first candidates to be elected to United States Congress, but then also going on to actually make a bid to run for president back in 1972 as well. And Regina King, of course, is coming off of really a historic few years. You know, she's tapped into directing. She's obviously continued to work as an actress, won an Academy Award a few years ago, and she's tackling this project, which I know has been pretty close to her for quite a while now. She talked about it recently, wanting to do this movie, I think about 12 or 13 years ago, but wow. Sort of actively spoke about the fact that she just wasn't ready at that time. Like, it was actually a blessing in disguise that they did not make the movie when they were initially trying to make it, and that it actually benefited her to wait all these years later to come back and tackle Shirley Chisholm, because it is such an important person in human history. But I have not checked this one out yet. You have actually gone to check this one out on Netflix. So I will pass it over to you. What did you think about this new film, Shirley?
Man, everything that you said about Shirley Chisholm made me very interested to watch this. Or Regina King, I should say, who's playing Shirley, made me very interested to watch it. Plus, I'm just a Regina King fan. Netflix has gone through like a rabbit hole of biopics, I guess. Like, first we get Rustin, now we're doing Shirley. Do we name biopics over anything except their name anymore? It's really funny. I guess you know exactly what you're getting. But it really kind of feels, to be honest, similar to Rustin in that way. It feels like we're just trying to tell a story of, I think the difference between Rustin and Shirley, people know who Shirley Chisholm is, right? Versus Rustin was like, everybody's like, oh, who's this guy? Shirley Chisholm made a dent in history. She was really a force to be reckoned with. One of my favorite things about her, and you'll see quotes about this and who she was, is like, Shirley Chisholm had no boss. And even in the movie, you'll see the way Regina King plays it, of like, there's moments where she's like, I'm just gonna go talk to the person I should talk to, and everyone's like, whoa, 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 you can't just move up and talk to that person. Like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? And so Shirley Chisholm, if you see any videos about her or any documentaries, like, she really was a dope person. And what makes it different from this movie, different from Rustin in particular, Rustin, you knew that at the end of it, the Million Man March was going to be a thing, right? And history knows that actually happened. So, you know, Rustin by the end of the film is going to be successful. Shirley's kind of the opposite. You know, Shirley Chisholm didn't get elected as president. We would have a whole nother different future. And so that's what made me interested to watch it, I think, is that juxtaposition of like, we kind of know Shirley Chisholm loses, but how do we get there? And historically, this is not necessarily a spoiler or anything, but historically, what made Shirley such a hard individual, or what made her, I guess, her rise to ascendancy so hard as president, even as part of the role she held before that, what made it so hard was her intersectionality. Women were split on her and black people were split on her. It is almost impossible when that vote is split for you to do anything. And so this movie is kind of about that. Why are people split? What is Shirley trying to achieve? What is it about her family that makes her like this, that makes her like this, and that makes her journey so difficult? And overall, it's okay. It's kind of similar to Rustin, I think, in the way of like, you're not necessarily inventing anything new. There's not too much about Shirley after watching this that I feel like I learned per se. I feel like I knew most of this already. It's like just taking me through the journey of this specific moment in her life, which I do love. It's not a cradle to the grave. I do love that. But it's just, we've been there, kind of done that. I wish there was more to add. And that's unfortunate. It's an okay watch. It's an okay movie. Probably a little long to get to the ending that we got to. It also wraps up kind of fast, even though it is long. But it's just fine at the end of the day. I wish there was just so much more. And I think Regina King, she plays her part. She does what she has to do. But yeah, it turns out to just be a normal biopic and movie. Again, that's kind of how I felt with Rustin as well. And again, these are both Netflix biopics. I'm like wondering if this is a trend that they're going to continue to do. Like, is the next movie Medgar? You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't got, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. But again, we've talked about biopics at length, you know, on this podcast. I don't know what else they can do, but they're... Who knows? Maybe there needs to be a new formula that needs to be invented. But again, overall, Shirley is just fine. They don't really add anything new to the pot. But I did enjoy Regina King playing such a historical figure. Yeah, in this movie.
I got a follow up question about, you know, what you just brought up there, because I you know, Netflix is obviously the big purveyor of a lot of these, especially, you know, with Rustin just coming out like 6 months ago. But Is it better that we just have these, even if they're super average? Like, mm-hmm. is it worth having them just exist, even if they're just like okay movies? Or is there an argument to be made as to why make it if it's not going to be truly insightful, truly revelatory, something that's unique and different? Like, we understand that these are important figures, but they're also in the history books. They're real people. You can go learn about them. You can read a book. You can open, you know, all of that stuff is readily available. Do we need a film about this individual? And so I just asked that because there is a Hollywood and a world in which none of these movies ever get made.
Yeah.
20 years ago. You know, they weren't getting made because you didn't have as many tech companies, streaming companies out there looking for as much as they can tell, trying to appeal to certain audiences and demographics. But now because we have these new avenues, you know, these new streaming services and the Netflixes and the Prime Videos of the world, who are investing more money and resources into the stuff, and they're looking to make sure that they're satisfying these audiences, perhaps the development and the production of these is kind of the sacrifice of that. Like, well, we're going to give it to you, but it's not going to be the greatest thing. It's not going to be this huge movie. So I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think that it's, you know, just worth having these movies, even if they're not exceptional, or should we just like let them live in the history books as opposed to trying to do something if we don't have any new take to their lives?
That's such a good question that I think we need to present to a whole nother audience that's not just the listeners of this podcast, because I feel like for a while now, we've been trying to chase, I guess technically since 2014, 2015, I kind of feel like we've been trying to chase Selma, right? And like the feeling that movie gave us in terms of like, you knew it was Martin Luther King, but like it was like a story we had never seen. It was very like, it's probably still Ava's best movie to me, probably. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like, but also without that, would we have talked about it? You know, and so now it's like, it makes it hard for me to kind of, you know, really reckon with what you're saying. Cause without Rustin, would I have known Rustin was? You know what I'm saying? Without that movie attempting to become what it is through Netflix, through all of these things, how would I have heard about him, or when would I have heard about Rustin? You know, I don't know. And it's not, we knew about Shirley Chisholm. I think she was more prominent than Rustin was, right? Like, people know who Shirley Chisholm is, but do people really know the ins and outs of what the struggle she went through while she was running for her presidency? Again, the book is there. All of that stuff is there, but does it take the movie for us to find the book? Like, I don't know. That's a really good question. I think that, again, maybe somebody else can answer better, because I can see both sides. I can see like, heck no, don't make that movie. Just promote the book. You know, she had a documentary and 20 years ago, I think it was like literally came out like 2004. But yeah, there was another documentary came out by Shirley Chisholm 20 years ago. And you could tell people to watch that, you know, but when it comes to these historical figures, you know, I don't know. I think that's a really good question. Do you have an answer?
I think it's a couple of things, because it all depends on, you know, where you're coming at it from. In the case of Bayard Rustin, I didn't know who Bayard Rustin was. I actually knew a lot about him just because of some things that I did in high school that exposed to me to less prominent figures in the civil rights movement. So I had a good idea of who he was. And I think the reality is that most people, to your point, don't know. So there is value in exposing, like, oh, well, you know, you might think one thing about the civil rights movement and who launched these certain initiatives or whatever the case may be. But actually, it was this person who we couldn't at that time, we couldn't present in the forefront because of his sexuality. You know, there is value to that. I think that ultimately it's one of those things where if it were up to me, I think it's really dependent upon the availability of what's already out there. Like if there's a really good documentary about somebody out there that's already in existence and this movie is coming out and we can't necessarily do anything different or top what that documentary exposed about that person in a good way, then should we be doing it just for the sake of doing it? Or even in a textual sort of context and a literary sort of context, you know, I don't know if certain things need to be adapted into live action. You know, we just talked about the origin movie from Ava DuVernay, speaking of, yeah. And there could be an argument made that maybe that wasn't the best thing to adapt. There's value in it, but I don't know. I don't know if that's something that's going to necessarily resonate and work for everybody. I do think that movie is like pretty good, probably above, you know, average for sure.
Yeah.
But some of these more average fares where it's like, yeah, the film is fine, but what value is it necessarily adding? That's always going to depend on the person, depend on who gets exposed to whoever that individual is, especially if they didn't know about them. I will say, conversely, on the other side, it does do a really good thing for certain actors. Like Coleman Domingo got an Oscar nomination from that performance.
That's true.
You know, so for him personally, that's a gain and a benefit. Like that probably wouldn't have happened if he didn't have that opportunity. Now, presumably, his career in the future is going to be great. He's going to get a lot more opportunities because of what happened with Rustin. So that is a plus. That is a net positive, obviously. I just, you know, again, I look at it from just a movie perspective, like every other genre. Like, despite these being historical figures and their importance to real human history, still a movie at the end of the day. And yeah. I look at it like any other genre. What's the value here, really? Like, why are we doing it? Is it really saying something that's going to be compelling and enticing to actually, like, enlighten us and provide us with new information and new things about this individual? And if we can't quite get there, then, I don't know, maybe we got to reexamine it and try something else. And so that's where I come at it from. So it'll be interesting to see like what other projects they tackle. They have done a lot. They did the Madam C.J. Walker joint a while ago too.
Everything just feels okay though. You know, everything is that's okay.
And if we're talking like that, and these are like supposed to be really historical black figures, it's like I want it to be better than okay. You know, absolutely. I don't want to. Because I'm not gonna watch it again. I'm just gonna check it out and be like, oh well, you know, this might just be a good middle school movie to show fourth graders to get them to learn about.
I'm gonna play My Friend Martin again.
Yeah, run that one back. That shit's on YouTube. That's the one I'm gonna play.
Our God Friend Martin.
That did more for me about learning about Martin than a lot of other stuff did. That was interesting. That was different. I mean, you know, time travel, animation, like, yo, where's that audacity to just take something and just completely turn it on its head? I feel like we kind of need that instead of doing the by the book stuff. So we'll have to see. But I'm glad for Regina King that she did finally get this off the ground. But folks, those are all of our thoughts on the brand new biographical drama, Shirley. If you've checked this movie out on Netflix, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, we're going to transition and talk about the news of the week. Got a few news items that we got to hit. First and foremost, there's a new video game coming out next year, a brand new superhero video game. And now we know the title. It's a game that we've known about for a couple years, I think, at this point. It was going to star Captain America and Black Panther, but not T'Challa. Azuri, the grandfather of T'Challa. And we knew that this game was going to be set during World War II. We now know that the game is called Marvel 1943: Rise of Hydra. And as I said, it will indeed star Captain America, Steve Rogers, as well as Azuri, the Black Panther, during World War II, the grandfather of T'Challa. The story of this video game will be set in a occupied Paris during World War II. And it's going to see these two iconic heroes kind of clash before ultimately, I would assume, form a team in order to combat and try to go against the rise of Hydra, which we know in the comics is one of the biggest villains, the biggest villainous factions and groups in all of Marvel Comics. But not only did we get the title, we got a story trailer that's showcasing so much, showcasing the graphic power of this video game. And we also got a few other teases as well about other playable characters. There's going to be two other Not superheroes, it doesn't look like, but two other supporting characters that we will be playing as. And they showed a lot during this presentation for this new upcoming game, which is being developed by Skydance. And also Amy Hennig, who is mostly known as the developer behind the Uncharted franchise. And so definitely big pedigree there. I know you saw this. I know you checked it out. We definitely put it out on social media. How are you feeling about this game? You know, just everything you saw, the story, the look. What are you looking forward to most about it?
How does this look like this? Oh, my goodness. Like, I've watched a lot of game trailers, and a lot of them have been fire recently. Game people have been going pretty stupid, but the way this looks, I know so many people who's on the timeline is like, oh, there's a new movie coming out. I was like, no, this is a this is a video game. Like this, there, if all the cutscenes look like this, to be honest, the gameplay can low-key be bad. I'm here for the cutscenes, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is crazy. Yeah, it looks really good and cinematic. I love the 1943 take and where we are in this world, and I think they're gonna go crazy, man. It feels good. It looks good. The voice actor Kerry Payton, who plays King Ezekiel in The Walking Dead, is playing Azuri Black Panther. There's a good and a bad to this. The bad to this is that because they're trying to emulate the actor, they also have taken the skin tone of Kerry Payton and made him Black Panther. So he's a little brighter than he probably should be. And that kind of throws me off when I see it. I'm like, dang, that's a light-skinned ass Black Panther. What are we doing here? On the bright side, he is voice acting his ass off. He sounds great. He's speaking with conviction. He is challenging Captain America in this trailer. It's everything that I love to see in a Black Panther character. Is like, you're the white poster boy of America in Captain America, and I'll have my own black ass, completely black, African technological advanced nation. What are you saying to me? I love that dynamic, and that's exactly kind of what they're going through in this game. And I feel like, and I just can't wait to get into the nitty gritty of what's going to happen. It's very similar to kind of when T'Challa entered the MCU in Civil War. It does feel like that. Like, who are you talking to? I am the king, you know what I'm saying? And so it looks really good. I can't wait to see some gameplay, because that's really going to tell a lot. But again, if it looks like this, gameplay just needs to be average, you know what I'm saying? And they fuck around and make a good gameplay, make a good game, we're looking at what could be another Marvel masterpiece. Because to be honest, in the recent years, DC has not been fighting back in terms of video games. We got Guardians of the Galaxy. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got these Spider-Man games.
They've been laying down on their Spider-Man.
Come on. Like, fight back. DC, fight back. Marvel has been doing really good licensing their games to these different studios and coming out on top. Shoot, really, I could say Disney, because Star Wars has... they've had some weird releases, but with the Jedi Survivor, the Jedi games, they're doing great. And so I need DC to stand up. This game looks really good. Can't wait to see some gameplay. It looks good. It looks good.
You hide behind that shield that does not belong to you. He was going crazy. I was like, going crazy. Oh, yeah, this shit's lit. I'm here for it. I can't wait for this. This looks incredible. This game looks so fucking incredible. I want my hands on it immediately. I think the gameplay will be fan fucking tastic because it is organic. Like, Uncharted is great, exactly. Gameplay, you know. So I have no doubts that that's going to match exactly what we saw with the look and the feel of these graphics in this presentation, which is just unreal. The detail. I mean, I watched the whole little presentation that they did, and you get to see Azuri with the mask off. That was like a little treat that they showed, and you just see the facial movements and the motions, and oh my god, the hair follicles, the gray and the dreads, like the dreadlocks. It's just like, it's crazy what they're doing, and just all the detail and everything here. And I'm really excited about the story. Really excited for this because, you know, historically we know Captain America very much involved in World War II. Obviously, that's the origin of the character. One of the supporting characters is a Howling Commando, a Black Howling Commando. So I'm excited to see how that factors in. But now you're throwing in Wakanda and Azuri and the Black Panthers and the Dora Milaje likely into this whole thing, and Cap and Black Panther as characters have so much history. Oh my God. God, I just can't wait. I cannot wait. And it's going to come out, hopefully, they say 2025. Hopefully, they can stick to that timeline because, man, this is going to eat up a lot of hours once it drops. I definitely can tell. So I'm excited for it. We also got another, you know, bunch of new trailers that came out this week, as we were expecting now that things are gearing up for the summer and fall movie and TV seasons. We got new trailers for Beetlejuice, which is going to be the sequel, of course, to the original Tim Burton movie. Tim Burton, of course, is coming back along with Michael Keaton. Jenna Ortega has joined the cast. Winona Ryder will be back. A lot of the major players. Also, Alien Romulus. We got a first quick teaser for that movie. It's about a minute long. Very quick look, but it's coming from Fede Alvarez. That'll be dropping this fall. And then on the TV side of things, we got two new trailers from Max. We got dueling trailers for season two of House of the Dragon. They gave us a House of Black trailer and then also a House of Green trailer. So you get to see how both sides are shaping up for the impending war there. And then last but not least, we got a look at The Penguin, which is going to be a show coming out on Max this fall. This is set in Matt Reeves' The Batman universe. Colin Farrell will be back as The Penguin. Can't wait for that one. That's going to be, you know, somewhat of a dramatic take on that universe. And I think really exploring the criminal underworld of Gotham and the rise of Penguin now that he is a major force in the city. So, yeah, man, what do you want to say about any of these trailers? What stood out? What are you most excited for? Talk to us.
I got to go down the list, man. Beetlejuice. I'm just excited for Tim Burton to be back and doing something and about to be having fun again with Michael Keaton. It's like, again, Ghostbusters. What year are we in? Alien, Ghostbusters. This is just like ridiculous. Now you're saying Beetlejuice is... I don't know what's happening. It's really weird, but I'm excited for that movie. It looks really good. It looks stylized. Winona Ryder looks really good in the trailer. I was like, wow, this Winona Ryder, this is crazy. What's going on here? So yeah, excited for Beetlejuice. We'll see what happens. I don't know the story or anything, but I'll be there. Alien Romulus. I really like this teaser. It's like a minute, 7 seconds. Yo, Fetty Alvarez. Hey, yo, he might be doing something. And the thing that made me double excited is he kind of got like some, and again, this could just be good marketing, but he got sign off from both Ridley Scott and James Cameron saying they both already watched the movie and they both liked it. I just don't feel like you would force those words into their mouths. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Cameron also said Terminator Dark Fate was good. So I'm like, that don't mean much to me at this point.
That's true. But like, those are two important people, man. Alien and Aliens. Those are important people to talk to. So, but yeah, I really like the trailer. I like the way the camera's moving in that teaser. Really good stuff, man. I'm excited for Alien more than I was before. I didn't know how to feel, but I thought that was a good teaser. House of the Dragon dueling trailers. Genius marketing. It's just genius having two trailers completely different, one for the black side, one for green side. I thought it was great. I'm very much team black. I'm here for Targaryen, dragon, Rhaenyra, everything. And Matt Smith, man, he's just, his presence is just really cool on that side as well. And then Penguin, man, I want to know who he's talking to in this teaser. I'm like, who is sitting on the other side? Like, who are you talking to? Is it somebody important? But it looks really good. You know, Matt Reeves is going to stylize it. You know, it's going to be good. I still can't believe that's Colin Farrell. It does not look like him. But yeah, I'm pretty excited for all of these teasers and trailers that drop, man. So yeah.
It was such a small thing, but the Alien Romulus trailer, I mean, they just said, just show blood, just show gore. Don't show anything else. Just show gore. And it's like, huh, how effective. What a great move. I mean, there's been blood in the other movies like Alien Covenant and Prometheus. They had blood, but also there wasn't as much blood as there could have been in those movies.
In this teaser.
This one is bloody as fuck. It's like, oh, yeah, just throw it all over the fucking place, all over the ship. Like, why not? And that was just really effective. Like, yeah, throw in that terror, throw in that horror from the Xenomorph. Like, that's what we need to just get back to the roots of what it is. So, yeah, Fede Alvarez, man. I mean, he's great. He's really great. I think he's onto something. I like the idea of the dueling trailers, but they weren't all that different to me. They kind of felt like the same trailer, if I'm being honest. Like, it was some of the same scenes. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I get it. But they were both like a minute, in 15 seconds, so it's really the 2:30 that you would expect, you know, just split in half. So, you know, it was fine, but that show's going to be great. It doesn't matter. But yeah, it's going to be a great movie and TV season. June's going to be busy. July's going to be busy. And then August, like once we get into the fall, there's a few things like Alien and Beetlejuice. Those are both coming out like towards that fall season. Alien comes out at the tail end of summer in August, and then Beetlejuice. We'll get that in September, which is going to be, I think that'll be good, because traditionally September is like a very dry month. Very, very boring. Nothing month, almost also, very similar to January.
We will just not have horror films in October. Like, why Alien ain't in October?
Well, you know, horror. I think because they've gotten so much bigger and mm-hmm. and the upside is a lot better. Some of those are being positioned as summer tentpoles now. You know that that's just kind of the nature of it, where it's like we can make money at any point of the year. So put it in August. Put it. You know, Smile came out in August a couple of years ago.
It did.
This one is kind of taking that spot. We see horror movies coming out even earlier than October.
Yeah, February,
some definitely
March.
Still do, but I think Smile comes out in October this year, which is good. Smile 2, the sequel. I think that comes out in October. And I feel like the new Saw should, or that actually might drop in September, because that last one dropped in September as well last year, Saw 10. But I know they have another Saw coming out this fall as well. So things
Terrifier
are just all
3.
Over the place.
That's the one.
Terrifier 3 does come out in October. Okay. So that'll be, and that's getting a theatrical release, right? I think that's going to be dropping
it.
Also, okay. So get a nice little fix, that should hold us over. But yeah, exciting things. Definitely can't wait for all of these projects. Just hope that they're all good. Can't wait for them. Speaking of HBO, though, Euphoria Season 3. We're not going to be getting it anytime soon. They were initially slating this to come out in, I think it was 2025. They were still trying to hit that target date, which we found out at the end of last year. You know, they started to tease a lot of their upcoming release dates for big projects. 2025 was shaping up to be a big year for HBO and for Max. Last of Us Season 2, The Return of the White Lotus, and also Euphoria Season 3 were all slated to come out next year. But now we are hearing that Season 3 is now delayed indefinitely. None of the scripts are apparently done for Season 3. And HBO released a statement to Variety in which they said, quote, HBO and Sam Levinson remain committed to making an exceptional third season. In the interim, we are allowing our in-demand cast to pursue other opportunities, end quote. So things are halting. It looks like they were going to start filming in like a few weeks. There was a lot of chatter, a lot of talk that they were going to get back to it and give us Euphoria Season 3, which I still think if it ever does happen, if we do finally get that season, it's going to be the last one. But what do you think about this? The fact that we're just going to have to wait. It's not going to be around anytime soon. It might be a year delay, maybe even longer. How are you feeling about this?
I think it's fine. There's other things to sink our teeth into. We just talked about it before we started recording the show. There was a little bit of other news that came out and said Season 3 would be post high school. And at that point, to me, a lot of this becomes a lot less time sensitive, you know what I mean? When it comes to people getting older and all of that, it's like, oh, if Season 3 is going to happen after high school anyway, it could just happen, you know, kind of whenever. And I'd rather for everything to be in a good spot versus them having to rush and Sam Levinson's like, oh, the script's not done. HBO's like, we don't care. Make it anyway. Like, I don't need all that to happen. So it is what it is. It's fine. Season 2 was already like good, but not great, you know, to me. And so like you said, hopefully it's the last one and hopefully it's good, but I'm all for being patient here.
Yeah, I'm not dying to see Euphoria. Like, that's not the thing that I'm like the most looking forward to. But what I will say, I mean, it's a cultural moment, though. You know, it's a thing that galvanizes the masses. It's one of the few TV shows that feels like appointment television. Like, you have to watch it when it airs. Like, everybody's watching Euphoria, especially Season 2. That was a moment at the top of 2022 when it dropped. And so we won't have that, so they have to make sure that they can substitute it for big shows that are going to get people tuned in. Last of Us is doing great. White Lotus will... It's not as big as Euphoria by any means, but it does get a respectable amount of people to watch it as well. And so, I won't ever deny their ability to generate stuff that's going to get people talking. But, this cast got to fucking work, man. Look at everybody. Like, Zendaya, top of the world. Sydney Sweeney is killing it right now. Jacob Elordi killing it. Like,
busy.
These people gotta get paid. Like, they can't wait up for this show. Like, these are still like young working actors that need their checks. So I ain't mad.
What's the Angus's Cloud little brother in the show? What is his name? I forgot his name in the show.
Don't know.
I forgot his name in the show.
I know who you're talking about, but I don't.
But this is random as hell. But I just intrusive thought. He's a boxer, like a professional. Like, he be like boxing. Like, no. Like, I'm pretty sure when he hits like 18, I don't think he's 18 yet, he's like 16, he's going to be like a crazy good boxer. I know it's random, but that just popped in my head.
Well, he's busy, so he'll be good. Yeah. He has a career ahead of him. That's great. Hopefully he hits them boxing screens soon. Maybe he can
ooh, that'd be Logan tight. Paul.
Yeah. But yeah, man, everybody got stuff to do. So let them go work. I'm glad that they can just kind of be relinquished from all of this and they can go take on their other projects. But in doing that, you're gonna have to wait. Because, you know, the more projects people take on, that's just going to push the schedule back further. Mm-hmm. So if people are waiting on it, you're going to have to wait just a little bit longer. In other news, the Joker sequel, it's slated to drop this October. We got a little bit more information about what type of musical it's going to be. We've been hearing that it's a musical, and apparently it's going to be a jukebox musical. So not like straight original songs, but mostly reinterpretations of popular songs. And an insider who spoke to Variety says that there's going to be at least about 15 reinterpretations of very well-known songs, but there is room and opportunity for an original song or two to possibly be added to the final version. And so I didn't predict that this would be the case with the movie. I thought that they were probably going to put together a few original songs, but it doesn't feel like that that's the direction that they're going if this report is something that we believe to be true. Does this change your excitement at all for the movie? Does it kind of alter your perception, the fact that they're going to do reinterpretations and covers as opposed to making all new original music?
Nah, it doesn't really mean anything to me. And part of it is just because I barely know what this movie is anyway. Like, I feel like at this point, I just have to watch it to understand. But every time news comes out, I'm like, I guess, like, whatever is about to happen. I think I will say initially when you hear that is a musical, I am thinking, oh, everything will be original, right? Like, oh, these would be all original songs. But at the same time, this is a musical with Joker and Hart. There's already going to be a lot going on. So I'm not mad per se that it's going to be a jukebox musical either, because it's like, oh, we're going to know the songs. And I think that's cool sometimes to get crowd participation. Hopefully the songs that they pick are good. That could be a thing. Like, if there's a couple songs in there, I'm like, oh, I don't like this song. Why is this song a thing? That could be a hindrance to the movie. But other than that, again, I barely know what this movie is, and I kind of, yeah, I don't really care for now. And if they do add some original songs, cool. If they don't, hopefully it works for the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all I can really say right now.
Yeah, this is fine. I mean, you know, Mamma Mia, great movies, and that's a jukebox musical. They just take,
yep,
popular ABBA songs, the best of ABBA, and just do it in the ABBA movie. And I'm like, I have fun watching this. Like, yeah, just sing fucking Dancing Queen 10 times. I'm here for it. And so I'm not mad at it. Yeah, pick some great songs. Get us a Beatles song. Get us a Frank Sinatra. Like, throw it all in there. I don't care. I'll have fun either way as long as it's done well. And I think it presents an opportunity to, you know, do a reinterpretation, do a cover, but you can always make it your own. That's the point of a cover, to do something different and still be able to subvert expectations, even though it's going to be something that's familiar. But it's kind of a cheat code. It's definitely kind of a cheat code to win people over if it is songs that people are very familiar with. But yeah, I'm still looking forward to it. And our last news item, we just found out that a brand new theme park centered on the Dragon Ball universe is being built, and it's quite ironic that this announcement is being made just a few weeks after the passing of Akira Toriyama. But this is going to be built in Saudi Arabia. They're building a ridiculous new, I don't even know what to call it. It's like an entertainment complex that they're building. And so it won't just be this theme park. It's many other things. They're building a Six Flags and all sorts of other resorts and things. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be double the size of Walt Disney World in Florida. It's going to be double that. So they're investing
whatever that means. That's crazy.
Billions and billions and billions of dollars into this. But this, you know, one of the centerpieces of this is going to be a brand new Dragon Ball theme park, the world's first Dragon Ball theme park. It's going to be spread over 500,000 square meters. It's going to have seven different themed areas, all taking from the original series, really iconic locations like Kame House, Capsule Corp. And then the theme park will feature 5 state-of-the-art rides, but also have a lineup of more than 30 attractions overall. And they also release some concept art. So if you want to go check out what it might look like, you can go see the concept art that's out there right now. They have just all sorts of plans for this huge park that they're looking to build in this brand new entertainment complex in Saudi Arabia, excuse me. So I just got to ask you, when you going, man? When we making this trip to go to this Dragon Ball theme park? Because this should sound lit.
Yo, what? They need to tell me the opening day. You know what? I look, I will sacrifice and I'll take the first ride. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got crash dummies and everything to figure out the roller coaster. I am
test me down. Test me.
Test me. I'm down to be one of the first people in this theme park. I absolutely cannot wait for this. I think it's going to be amazing. I hope the rides have like nerdy names, like the Kamehameha or the Nimbus. Like, you know what I'm saying? I need to be able to walk into an attraction and it's like sales tournament. And I'm like, what does that mean? And experience something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I need all of that. They probably got, you know how Harry Potter Land has like butterbeer? They probably going to have like Sensu beans or something weird.
Sensu beans. Yo. Let me get some of them Sensu beans.
Let me get some of them Sensu beans, dog. Like, I'm ready. It's going to be epic. And I'm very serious. Like, whenever... either opening week, if it's not too crazy, you know what I'm saying? Maybe a couple months after, but yeah, we're going to have to make this trip, bro. It's going to be a great one for sure.
Did you see they have the centerpiece of the park is going to be a fucking like mountain of Shenron, and it's going to be a roller coaster in the center.
Fire.
Like, that's fucking brilliant. I never would have thought of that, but brilliant. It's so good.
They've been working on this for a minute. I think Toriyama just happened to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they ready for this.
Yeah, they definitely knew what they were doing here. You don't just prop this up, you know, in a few weeks. Like, this is years in the making, and we're just now hearing about it. I mean, they probably announced it earlier than they wanted it to, but they were like, you know what? Let's do something for the fans. It's a good time. You know, everybody's really loving on Dragon Ball right now. Let's go ahead and roll this out. So I think great timing overall. And to be honest, I didn't have going to Saudi Arabia in my bingo card for life.
Now we do.
But I'm reconsidering now because I definitely want to fucking go. This shit looks so fucking fun and lit. And so, I definitely want to check it out. Hopefully when they give us a release date and an opening date and all of that stuff. And hopefully, you know, when people go to visit it and we can see reviews, like, ideally things are going to be positive and that would make us, you know, super excited to go. But this is great. I love this. I love that, you know, more and more properties are getting their opportunity to shine on such a big stage. Like, when you get a theme park dedicated to something, that feels like next level. That's like you've made it. You've really fucking permeated the cultural zeitgeist. When you talk about Harry Potter, Wizarding World, the Avatar stuff, Galaxy's Edge, Avengers Campus, like, I mean, there's even the Studio Ghibli, you know, stuff that they have propped up. Like, there's all these destinations that open up these worlds that I think get people super excited about them. And so this one definitely has the potential to be one of the best. And so I'm hoping for it. But folks, we will certainly have to see whenever it does open up. But with all of that being said, that's all we have for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you, as always, for tuning into another podcast. Definitely check out our review of the first two episodes of X-Men 97 if you have not already. First and foremost, you should watch the show if you haven't, because it's that great.
Please.
And then go check out our review of that series. And then also be on the lookout next week as we review the latest episode of X-Men 97. And we're also going to spend some time this weekend checking out the latest releases, including Godzilla, Kong, The New Empire, which is dropping this coming weekend. So we're going to go check that out and come back next week to talk all about that. So definitely plenty to look forward to. But until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Nerds of Mischief collection at twoblacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy.
And we out, y'all. Peace. Ball like I won a championship game. You know these hoes hungry, they gon' fuck for a name. I put her on the game, she get fucked for a chain. Got your girl in this bitch.